vaccine is essential. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
Good evening. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between. I'm your host, Sarah DeA, recording from home on Thursday, August 12th, 2021. On tonight's show, my guests, A Touch of Valencia, Spain in St. Michel.
Feel good to be there and see, like, kids around and like a sense of like your life, the life is going back as it was.
And we'll revisit some of our favorite interviews from the past year.
For now, I'm just going to focus on my other practices and give myself space and time to just grieve for the next while, the performance part of my practice. And then in a few months or in a year, we'll see if out of this grieving something else emerges and I feel I want to get back into the studio.
Before we begin, some updates. Canada is poised to enter the fourth wave of the COVID-19 pandemic, with COVID case counts increasing daily here in Quebec and outside the province. As for Quebec, the Premier François Legault says we are ready to confront the latest wave. The provincial officials announced both its back-to-school plan this week, as well as further details about the vaccine passport. Using a free smartphone app or a paper copy to prove that you've been double vaccinated, you'll be able to access non-essential businesses starting on September the 1st. The idea is that people who've taken the steps to get both shots of any of the vaccines available can continue to lead their lives without shutting everything down. This will apply to bars, restaurants, gyms, and it sounds like arts venues, like movie theaters, will be included as well. Stores and museums will be exempt. So, will you need to flash an app or a QR code on paper to see a play or a comedy show? We'll get more details in just over a week from now, August 23rd. In the meantime, though, several theaters are starting to roll out their plans for the upcoming season, including the major French venue Théâtre du Nouveau Monde. TNM is celebrating its 70th year with a focus on female voices and stories, with works by local writers Michel-Marc Bouchard, Normand Charette, Michel Tremblay, Fanny Britt, and Alexia Berger, as well as classics like Henrik Ibsen and Anton Chekhov. You can visit tnm.qc.ca for more information. La Licorne Theatre is also launching its 40th season under the theme Rien de trop beau. 11 shows kicking off September 7th with Fairfly by Catalan writer Joan Yago Garcia, directed by Ricard Soler Malol. It's a comedy about four friends in their 30s who launch a startup. It's all about friendship and whether, you know, you can still be friends while launching a business, the rules around entrepreneurship nowadays. You can visit theatrelalicorne.com for more information. And I imagine we'll be getting more notes on the upcoming theatrical season from various spaces as we ease through August. Usually season launches will happen at the end of spring, beginning of summer, a couple months in advance, but with the uncertainty of everything that's going on, they're only kind of being rolled out at this moment. It seems like. Now, looking at the immediate weekend to come though, happy Pride! The annual celebration of Two-Spirit LGBTQ+ community in Montreal is underway with in-person and online events. The Pride Parade is going ahead, but in a slightly different capacity, actually a throwback of sorts, this coming Sunday. Instead of winding along solely downtown, the action will start at Jean Mouse Park, corner Mount Royal and Park Avenue. Gathering begins at noon and then departing at 1 p.m. headed south on Park Avenue, then turning east on the traditional path of René Lévesque, ending around Atatakan and St. Catherine Street in the Gay Village. At 2:30, the traditional moment of silence in memory of victims of HIV, AIDS, and homophobia will be underway. The Pride team this year recalls that the city's first ever demonstration in support of the gay community was back in 1979, organized by the Pink Brigade and its founder, John Banks, with 52 people joining in. So the organizing team has kind of said that this is a bit of a throwback to that original event. It's going to be a bit different. There's going to be safety measures in place, and masks are also recommended. So that's coming up this Sunday. Live free shows are also taking place at the Olympic Park Esplanade tonight through Sunday, with free broadcasts happening online at fieltemtl.com. We have singer Roxane Bruno, who's performing tonight, rapper Sarah May, very talented of the moment performer, she's closing out the show Sunday, and international drag stars like Kinks Monsoon, Trixie Mattel, Aquaria, and Alaska 5000 are also performing remotely on a stage at the Esplanade, and as well through the Facebook page at 7:30 over the next couple of days. So for a full schedule and more details, you can visit fiertemtl.com, F-I-E-R-T-E-M-T-L.com. A very happy Pride. Be safe and enjoy this week's events. Now, weekends at La Tahue, the circus headquarters, and Mes Saint-Michel have been packed. Hot off the heels of Montréal Complètement Silk Festival in July, this venue next to Frederick Beck Park has played host to picnics, kite rentals, and a revolving door of new up-and-coming circus troupes every single weekend, along with pop-up acrobatic works in the neighboring residential streets of Saint-Michel. This weekend, though, marks the annual Faya de Saint-Michel, inspired by a European tradition wherein community members build a giant sculpture over several weeks, then burn it all down. For the second year in a row, though, the Faya de Saint-Michel will not go up in flames. It's going to build on the tree first constructed back in 2020. They did not set fire to that. And now the entire creation was set to burn in 2022. It's a fun show. There's lights, there's fireworks as well. But that won't be happening just because of the uncertainty, as we'll find out in just a moment. Now there's also music and performances to go along with that fun. So you'll be able to see the statue and also take in some free events. I rang up Marie-Christine Roy to explain the tradition of the Faya and the other events associated with it. She is programming and events coordinator at La Tahue. Welcome, Marie-Christine, to Upstage. So lovely to have you with us. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you.
I can't believe how busy things are at La Tahue this month, this summer. It seems like there are 1,000 different things you can do every single weekend. Why don't we start with La Fala? This is an annual event. It's actually inspired by a European tradition.
Yes, indeed. There's it's the Faya in Valencia. It's a big carnival that people are working in different neighborhoods, like a Faya. A Faya is like a structure, a sculptural display. And after everyone's bringing their Faya to the main place in the city, and they set ablaze just the sculpture with fireworks everywhere. It's like the big fiesta.
And it's
it's all over in the Valencia.
And it's always something that kind of happens in the summer, right? I don't know if it's like a late in summer event that's kind of like marks towards the end of the season.
In Valencia, it's like the 15th or it's in March.
Okay.
It's the day of like Saint Joseph, I think, or okay. Saint Jose. It's the patron of the carpenters.
Okay. And the people who build the Fala in Saint-Michel, kind of similar to what happens in Valencia, this is something they're working on over a period of several weeks, right?
Yeah. In Saint-Michel, it's over like 10 weeks. And we build that with Yaut from the community also. So that's the main link. Like, it's inspired by the Faya in Valencia, but it's less... You know, it doesn't take the town, you know, as in Valencia. But the main similarities, it's like the way we build the structure, the method, how you say that? The method that we use, the material that we use, and also to work with people from the community as well.
And is it a different design every year? Like, does it change from year to year what you're building?
usually we do a brainstorm with people from the community or come like different organization or like resident from Saint-Michel, and we talk about like about the theme that we can work on, and because it's set ablaze at the end usually, like we do a different theme each year. So this year we're working on we were brainstorming without the community this time because it was like kind of complicated with all the COVID recommendation. Absolutely. And so we decided to work around the theme of like celebration of reunite with human contact. That's a thing, something that everyone missed during the pandemic time. It's a universal feeling, I think. So we work about around this idea.
Oh, wonderful. And can you tell us any hints about what it's going to look like or how big it's going to be this year?
It's almost like 10 feet large up to 15, 16 feet up.
Wow.
There's a big tree that was built last year, because last year we did like a small faya. Mm-hmm. And with all the community and the artist Geneviève Lebel, we took this tree from last year and put it in the center of this new structure and added like some characters around it. And we did a like workshop with people, like with the Yalta Day Camp or with Elderneys also. So they built like small artifacts that we introduced to the structure, around the structure. And this year, like, unfortunately, it's not going to be set ablaze. So we're going to, like, next year in 2022, we're going to have, like, the tree for 2020, the structure the 2021, and the new structure of 2022. And that's going to be, like, a huge thing next year.
Something to
with
live.
Fireworks.
Something to look forward to. And I guess the reason why you're not setting it on fire for the second year in a row is that it's too logistically difficult with everything that's going on, bringing people together, and the audience is going to be limited.
Yes, we had to take the decision like this winter, so we didn't know how the summer will be. So at one point, the government was saying like 250 people's max outside, so that was kind of like too much of, like, you know, cost and energy to set in fire and bring like pyrotechnical pieces. And so we decided to build it with like bring the yacht together and bring the community out together and build a structure, but keep it for next year for a big party.
In any case, you can still come this weekend and check out the work so far. That is almost like a work in progress for 2022. It's free. People can reserve their spots. They must reserve their spots so they can get there. And I'm speaking with Marie-Christine Roy, who is programming and events coordinator at La Tohu. And we're talking about the events this coming weekend for the Faya de Saint-Michel. There's a lot of other events happening alongside the actual monument sculptural itself. Dance classes, there's music. Tell me about some of the elements people can see this weekend.
Yeah, you're going to be able to see Elage Diouf on Friday night, Bougat on Saturday, and there's La Bronze on Sunday. That's going to be in the circular, the main venue at Tohu. There's also Forward Movement, who's giving like urban dances class. There will be some circus performance on site also as well. And there's the circus weekend. So you can have like tickets to assist like in the main chapiteau outside. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be circus show as well.
Oh, that's
so a lot to see.
Yeah, and you're also having regular circus performers each weekend. So that'll be this weekend, the one after that, and the final one is the 28th and the 29th of August. Now, these are smaller circus troupes, right? Perhaps younger performers or groups that are not as big as the more established ones?
Yes, Yes, indeed. It's like, it's more like showcasing.
Mm-hmm.
Like new show, small troupe. Yeah, so it's a way to discover like different kind of circus also.
I'm speaking with Marie-Christine Roy, who's programming and events coordinator at La Tohu. I think it's really wonderful that so many events are being offered at La Tohu through the weekend. It's been such a really strange year and a half. Can you tell me at all about the ambiance, the feeling, the atmosphere at these weekends when you have families and young people coming out to, you know, see all these circus shows and to see this live music? What's that like?
It feels good to be there and see like kids around and like a sense of like your life, the life is going back as it was. So more festive, like having world beat music, and you can have lunch at the Bayou and take a picnic table, and you can have a lunch over there and see like circus performance. Like they just like, they're not announced, like they're on site, and you're gonna have like different kind of shows around you. It's just like, yeah, it feel good just to be like a little bit light, you know.
And I think the venue is also a great place for it, right? Because it's off the highway, it's an open space, there's place for parking, it's kind of an accessible area for families.
Yes, and you have the Parc Frédéric Bac just next to the Tohu, so it's a nice place to walk around, and it's a big natural park, like a one of a kind in North America, so it's nice to go see this as well. Awesome. And you can rent bicycle at Tohu and go in the park if you want. And also in the weekend, you can rent like I forgot the name. The cerf-volant.
Yeah, a kite. Yeah.
Yeah, you can rent a kite and just go run into the park with your kite. And yeah, it's a nice place to go with family.
So many options, so many things to do. Well, thank you so much, Marie-Christine, for taking the time to speak with us on Upstage about all the events at La Tohu, including the Fala coming up, the Faya coming up this weekend. Don't pronounce the double L. Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
That was Marie-Christine Roy, Programming and Events Coordinator at La Tohu. La Faya du Saint-Michel is on display all weekend. You can reserve your free spot at tohu.ca. And as I mentioned earlier, it will not be set aflame this year. They're saving that for 2022, but I think it's going to look spectacular. In any case, as Marie-Christine was describing it, they're building off a giant tree that was constructed last year, and then different community members, some youth groups, young teenagers, and older individuals have been making tiny animals and things to kind of go along with the tree this year, and then it's all going to be set aflame in 2022. She actually mentioned as well that they thought about burning down a version of the coronavirus, but early on they nixed that idea because it felt like maybe too negative, that maybe by this point in the year people would kind of be sick of coronavirus, and they didn't want to kind of focus too much on the pandemic and the virus, and instead wanted to focus on something else. Although I admit it would have been pretty cathartic if they had set fire to a giant virus molecule. Now, as for the music, Elage Diouf is going to perform Friday night at 7 o'clock. Mexican-Canadian performer Bugat performs hip-hop and Latin music at the Salon du Bal at 6:30 Saturday. And Lavrance, Quebec-Moroccan writer and singer performing, running different genres from alt-pop to rock, that's at 6 o'clock on Sunday. And the three circus troupes that will be spotlit this weekend: C Zirconium presents Colleen, Battement du Cirque will perform Locomotion, and Cirque Hors Piste presents Synapse. Six more companies present their work in the remaining weekends of August. And if you can't get out to La Tohu, well, Cirque Eloise and Les Sept Doigts, which are two of the most iconic troupes on the scene in Quebec, touring internationally, they are staging pop-up shows in the Old Port every Friday through Sunday until September the 7th. More info on all of that at latohu.ca, LATOHU. I'm Sarah Day, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. I'm Sarah Day, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. We're revisiting some favorite interviews from the past year. Since it is Pride Week in Montreal, I wanted to listen back to Kama Lamacarelle from last September. Kama is a multidisciplinary artist. They were due to present their solo show Zum Femme last April. That would be April 2020 at the Mai. That was shut down because of the pandemic. It was rescheduled for early October 2020, but then that too was postponed when the government canceled live events as the case counts rose. Kama has been hard at work over the past 5 years to develop Zum Femme. It's a personal show based on their childhood growing up transgender on the island of Mauritius. It weaves in queer history, colonialism, and genres like dance and storytelling. Kama has lived and worked in India and Canada, eventually settling in Montreal, where they have developed their multidisciplinary practice, as well as becoming a big part of the queer performance scene here. They also created open stage workshop Gender Blender at the Mai and co-founded an arts collective that amplifies the work of queer and trans artists. Here is my chat with Kama from last fall.
It's been all right. It's been two eventful couple of days with, I feel, extreme feelings, because I started my technical residency for my show on Monday morning, and then at the end of the day on Monday evening, while I was in the theater, I was listening to the press conference and learning live that the show would not happen. So it's been a couple of days of extremes.
Oh my gosh. What went through your mind when you heard the news?
I mean, my heart sank, really, because I didn't see it coming. Like, I really felt it came out of nowhere, on the one hand. I mean, also for context, this is a show that was initially scheduled to happen in April.
Yes.
And then so the show got cancelled once. And I don't know, I feel like that the art and cultural sector had just started reopening, right? Like, this would have been the opening, so Zum Femme, my show, would have been the opening show of the season at the Mai, the Montréal Arrêt Culturel, And turns out now, like, yeah, I felt like we were barely getting on our feet. And then suddenly somebody just pulled the rug from underneath our feet. And I felt it came out of nowhere. And I knew we were going into the red alert, but I didn't think that theaters would be shut down, in particular because theaters have such strict protocols as to who comes into the space, how you come into the space, where you sit within the space. Like, there's such a strict protocol around it. And I was just blown away because I was like, but shopping malls don't have that kind of protocols. You know, gyms don't have that kind of protocols. What is the logic? You know, even in terms of places of worship, where places of worship up to 25 people are still open, but the theater holds 22 people. So what is the logic? So I'm quite taken aback, I have to say.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. It must be so frustrating for you, just especially because of the timing that you're being dinged, you know, in between two lockdowns. That is just really like, you know, lightning striking twice. So where do things stand right now for ZomFam? What is your hope? Is it going to, what has the mic told you? Like, are you going to be remounting later? We're doing it virtually?
Well, the thing about ZomFam, I have to say, so ZomFam is an interdisciplinary performance that combines poetry, dance, rituals, and really the question that I had with it was, how would poetry in motion look like across the stage? So I wrote it as a poetry manuscript, and that ZomFam also came out as a book from Metonymy Press just a couple of weeks ago. So somehow, I don't know if that's a silver lining for me, but I'm like, at least the work exists on the page. The work exists on paper, and there's the book that people can still read and have access to. But there's nothing like actually seeing the body of the performer, you know, actually seeing that poetry move through my body, move across space, to hear it with my voice. So I don't quite know what happens next. Fortunately for us, well, audiences are not allowed into theaters, but we can still work. And I have a team of a few technical, you know, with my technical team, we're still in the theater this week because we're continuing our residency and we're mounting the show anyway. I don't know if we're ever going to show the work. But for me, the part that's important at this moment is to be able to have a sense of closure around the process, because this entire work has been 5 years in the making, really. You know, and it's been so many years, and the show specifically, it's been 2 years that I've been working on building this show. And I really want to be able to see the process come together, because yes, there's the showing of the work, but there's also the value in the process. And the process of creating has been extremely rich, extremely nurturing for me as a human being. So at least I'm getting to see the process come together and get finalized. Mm-hmm. I don't know yet, so I'm glad we get to finish the technical residency. You know, part of cancelling a show as well, something that I do want to point out to. A lot of times we think, oh, we cancel the show. It's not like we cancel the show and it just disappears. It's that actually there's so much labor that goes behind it, because even with a show like mine, it's a solo show, but I work with a team of 8 people, right? Like, so that's 8 people that I need to schedule. That's 8 people who might pay. So I have a responsibility towards them. I have to be accountable to them, right? Because they also have families that they need to feed, right? I can't just say, the project is cancelled. Go home. You're not going to get paid. That's not how it works, right? Like, so there's all of this that goes in the invisibilized labor that happens behind making art, behind creation, right? Because typically, we only see the final product, but I have a technical team and a team of a dramaturg and a team of collaborators. And so there's also that part. So for me, at least, we get to continue the work this week. But it is hard to maintain the resilience this time around, I have to say. It is harder than it was in the spring.
Speaking with Camilla Mackerel, who's a multidisciplinary artist, due to present ZomFam at the Mai on October 6th to the 10th, but things have been put on pause. And I'm so glad that you actually brought up the work behind you, because that's right, when we see a solo show, we see Kama on stage. But I was looking through your credits, and you have you had just mentioned the technical side of things, but also you have 2 people giving you advice on dramaturgy, choreography. There's someone you've listed as an external eye, which I think is a very interesting credit or interesting job to have, as well as production manager. And so there is a whole team going on behind you. I'm also wondering, as a performer, you just referenced to 5 years going into this, and congratulations on the poetry book being published this month or this past month as well. Do you feel like you also need to have closure in order to develop a new project or move on to the next topic that you're going to be exploring?
It's a good question. I think it's important for me to have a sense of closure right now in terms of seeing the show come together. I think I'm going to give myself time to grieve after that. I mean, already the first phase of the pandemic for me, the past 6 months, because when the show got cancelled in April, it was the beginning of the pandemic. Nobody knew what would be happening, right? And I went into that process of grieving, telling myself, okay, this show will not happen. Grieve it, let it go. And I think like now, I need to go through another process of grieving. But I'm lucky. I don't know if I would say luckily, but as me being a multidisciplinary artist, in that sense, I work across different media. And I think for me, the focus in terms of moving on is going to be my writing. And I also have a visual arts project. I have a new solo exhibit that I'm going to be developing over the winter. So I think at least in terms of the next year for me, I don't think I'm really going to be developing performance work. I think I'm mostly going to focus on writing and my visual arts practice because it doesn't make sense for me to be creating a new performance right now because I already have one that's fully mounted, but I never got, I don't know when I'll have the chance, if I have the chance to show it to an audience again. So I think for now, I'm just going to focus on my other practices and give myself space and time to just grieve for the next while the performance part of my practice. And then in a few months or in a year, we'll see if out of this grieving, something else emerges and I feel I want to get back into the studio. But for now, so I need rest. It's been...
Yes, of course.
You know, I'm like, I've been hard at work remounting this show for the past few weeks. And at this point, I'm like, okay, I'm just going to rest for a bit and grieve. And we'll see in a few months where we're at. And also we'll see... You know, what is the government's take? Unfortunately, it's so sad that our lives in that way rely on people who basically have no sense of what our everyday lives are like as artists, right? Like, and the different, you know, the ecology of work, of all sorts of labor that go behind it. As I was saying, just the fact of canceling a show has been so much administrative work. I've been working nonstop. I've been emailing, communicating, you know, it's like, because I need to like check in with every single one of member of my team, and then I need to reschedule things. And there's so much admin just going into the cancellation of the show, right? Like, forget the rescheduling it. And so I really hope that in the future, I don't know where things are going to go, but I do hope that us as artists, as creators, you know, because I think particularly in the time that we're living in right now, there's so much uncertainty, there's so much social unrest. And I do genuinely believe that the role of the artist is to dream, is to imagine, is to reimagine the world that we live in and reimagine the way in which we're relating with each other. And you know, and I think that's so needed right now. It is so important. For me, that's my role as an artist, to reimagine the world and then to create it, to offer it as a model of possibility to audiences, to the public, to the rest of the world. And I think we really need that right now. So I do hope that somehow down the line, you know, that the institutions and the government and the public is going to get behind artists and cultural workers.
That was my conversation with multidisciplinary artist Kama Lamacrell. You can look for their poetry book, Zum Fam, at your local bookstore. And I sure hope we'll get to see a live performance of Zum Fam sometime in the future, as intended. I'm Sarah DeAy, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. Yeah. I'm Sarah Day, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. I wanted to revisit another interview from a year ago, when a tempest and a teapot brewed over the casting of a Quebec adaptation of a hit TV show. Brooklyn Nine-Nine is a hilarious workplace comedy about bumbling but lovable cops. The show has received applause and a loyal fandom for featuring a diverse cast and characters from different sexual orientations. The Quebecer adaptation launched last fall, set in Quebec City under the name of Escouade 99 or 99. In the original, the roles of two Latina cops, Amy Santiago and Rosa Diaz, are played by Melissa Fumero and Stephanie Beatriz. Amy is nerdy and rule-abiding, and Rosa is a fierce badass. But here, Amy and Rosa became Fanny Lizotte and Rosalie Boucher, played by Mylène McKay and Bianca Gervais. Though the casting kept two key black male characters, Haitian-Canadian actors Vladimir Normil as Commander Raymond and Fayol Jean Junior as Sergeant Jeff. But someone noticed the difference in casting for Amy and Rosa, namely Melissa Fumero, who plays the fastidious Amy. She retweeted the trailer for Escouade 99 back in August 2020, saying, "This is like peeking through another dimension." And then she added, "Gotta say though, after watching this, I'm suddenly curious about the Latina population in Quebec. Just saying." A day later, Melissa added on Twitter, "I've been thinking about this a lot, and it basically comes down to this. While I understand the Latina population is very small in Quebec, and how many of them are funny actors, the Amy and Rosa roles could have gone to any BIPOC, Black Indigenous people of color, so it's disappointing to see that missed opportunity. Furthermore, I love actors, so I do not mean to shame these actresses. It's not their fault. It's up to the decision makers. Lastly, if the show is successful, I hope the creators take that opportunity to hire more BIPOC in supporting and guest roles." Melissa's comments sparked a new conversation about representation in Quebec. One of the people leading that conversation was Mara Gabriela Puentes Benitez, a Latina Montrealer who added her voice to the conversation back in August. She is a visual artist and started a podcast to discuss these issues. It's called Generation Z. And importantly, she is also a fan of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, the show. I spoke with Mara last August. Good evening, Mara. Thank you so much for taking the time to join Upstage. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good today. Thank you.
Yeah, you have had a busy week. Why don't we start with Brooklyn Nine-Nine itself as a show and what you like about this sitcom?
Well, honestly, it's the smartest sitcom on television right now. I think it's so it's diverse, it's funny without being disrespectful most of the time. I think the writing team is super conscious about taking time to really explain issues and shine them in a light that's maybe easier to introduce, especially in times like these. So that's something that was super important to me. So when they announced that Quebec was going to make an adaptation of it, I was a little bit on the edge, and I was right to be.
You were on the edge because you worried that it would, the expectations were high and maybe it would not meet expectations, or were you nervous because you kind of felt like maybe the casting and the diversity would be left behind?
That's what I felt. They announced the casting a year ago. So when I saw the names of the people who were going to be comedians, there's only two actors whose names I didn't recognize and was excited to see. Mm-hmm. And then when the first images were shown, then I realized how far they had pushed the adaptation.
Yeah. So this is something that you've had your eye on for a year now, because you mentioned the casting announcements and the initial plans from a year ago. What's it been like for you, as someone who cares about the show, cares about the Quebec version, but to see this firestorm around it? You know, it's so many people weighing in with different opinions. What is that like for you to see this happening?
Well, I think it's crucial that this conversation needs to be had in Quebec and regarding Quebec media and the diversity, and especially Quebecor, because other Quebec companies have been better at introducing diversity and more people from different backgrounds whether it be sexuality, race, or gender. So that's what really bothered me when I waiting for the new show.
So you identify as someone who's a Montrealer with Latin American, South American roots from Montreal. And how do you see, as an audience member, when you look at TV shows, maybe theater or even the media, news media, what goes through your mind in terms of representation? Do you see yourself adequately represented in how things are right now?
In traditional media, I don't. But when it comes to independent theater, independent television, podcasts, there I see the creators and I see the talent that Quebec has. So it's really just the big companies who don't want to take a chance on diversity or still haven't understood the point, which I find very strange.
Yeah, from my experience, looking at independent theater in both French and English and bilingual productions that come up, is that you do see more diversity on the ground, so to speak, in smaller spaces and actors who are just starting out. And it hasn't quite, crossed over yet. Do you think...
Which is strange. The conversation's been, it's been a conversation for 20, 30 years. I know that my mom talked to me about her experience growing up in Montreal, because she came here when she was really young. And they were also talking about representation and diversity and the clash between the French and the English in the city, which I think is still a huge part of the debate.
What would you like to see in terms of action being taken? I mean, whether it's a big company like Quebecor or if it's like arts organizations or audience members, what do you think are some concrete steps that are going to further along? As you're just saying, this is a debate and a thing that's been around for decades now.
I think the first step has been done. We're talking about it. We're talking about it gracefully. We're asking the right questions, I think. So I guess it's up to them now and for us to see and accept if these steps they take is enough.
You're hearing from Mara Gabriela Puentes Benitez, a Montrealer, who has been keeping an eye on the Escouade 9-9 reboot in Quebec. And as it's come out in the last week, some of the characters that were adapted into the Quebec version were not reflecting the ethnicity of the characters in the actual Brooklyn Nine-Nine version. So you actually took matters into your own hands. One of the things that went through my mind was seeing Melissa Fumero, the actress, you know, criticize the Quebec show, was thinking this is great because she's got a platform, she is an actress in the U.S., but she's not going to buy a ticket to a theater program in Quebec, she's not going to buy a book or watch a TV show, she's not Canadian. So she's raising awareness, but when it comes to taking action, I think some of it is on us. And what I love is that you took a step forward, you actually wrote to the production team. Tell me about why you wanted to do that, and if you have had any response yet.
Well, in the last couple of months, I've realized how important it is to take concrete steps and to raise awareness and ask the right questions, because if I'm not going to do it, then I'm not sure if anyone else will. And I was really quick at writing it. I knew what I wanted to say because it's questions that I've had for a long time. It just so happens that Quebecor's releasing a remake of a series that I absolutely adore, so it was the right timing. I never got an answer for them, which I find it very strange. We've been talking about it a lot over the media, online, for over a week, and they still haven't said anything, which I think is very telling. I'm hoping I'm eventually going to get an answer, even if it's not personally through an email, but out loud through the media as a statement or anything. But for now, it's silence radio on their side.
Okay. Now, devil's advocate, someone might say, well, maybe we just don't have enough, in this particular instance, Latina actors in Quebec. Or, you know, this show doesn't have to be faithful to the original. You know, if you look at The Office in the UK and the American version that came out, probably the most famous kind of reboot of a TV series, it didn't follow it exactly, right? What would you say to someone who says, like, this TV show isn't going to be the same, and we may have trouble finding these actors to fill these roles?
Well, to that, I'd like to answer that in the case of the Squad 99, well, the production team had a closed casting call to only one company with only a couple of comedians, so the opportunity wasn't even there for actresses who could have been interested. It didn't have to be Latina. He could have adapted it to Quebec reality, which has had massive loads of immigration through the last decades, and children who were born from that immigration and now live productive lives as artists and are part of the life of Quebec.
You know, a show doesn't, if it's a reboot, it doesn't have to be the exact same thing as the original.
To be called paid for adaptation rights. From NBC, which is a huge American corporation. So they must have spent a lot of money on it. And unlike NBC, Quebecor needs subventions from our taxes and our revenue to finance that show. So I would think that some of that money would go into researching the project they're buying into. I think if you Google Brooklyn Nine-Nine and its history and its impact and how it was almost canceled, why people fought to keep it around and why people keep asking for more seasons, why the fans are still involved, is because not only is it funny, but it raises issues and it helps start conversations that can be really difficult to have right now. So they didn't have to make a remake that was so different, but they also could have adapted it with its greatest strength, and disappointing.
Mara, the post that you put on Facebook includes the response that you got from the company that you've dealt with to pass the message along to the producers. You've gotten almost 400 comments, it's been shared over 1,000 times, and 1,600 people have liked, hearted, done the care symbol of it on Facebook. So you're getting positive comments, but also negative ones. What's this conversation like for you?
It's a conversation that I've had a lot with people around me growing up. So it's a question that I feel prepared to defend my position on, but also hear what other people have to say. It's kind of so I know where I can focus my energy on in the future around this topic. Otherwise, I think it started good conversations. I think a lot of great initiatives came out of it. I know that one photographer in particular, Julia Sachaud, started a Facebook thread with actresses who are different, who have different body types, different people from different places, people with different backgrounds, disabilities. So I think that something good can come out of it, and I'm hoping it will.
If we want to follow your ongoing discussion about this, hoping that you get a response from the team at the show, where can we follow you online? Has this become a public platform for you? Or
I guess you can follow me on my Facebook page. If I do get an answer, I will be updating it over there. Otherwise, I'm very active on Instagram, raising questions about a whole lot of different issues. I'm also working with a friend on a podcast about the Generation Z and in Montreal, and the questions we have, what we want to change, the changes we want to see, what affects us right now. So I guess that's what we're going to be working on in the next couple of months.
Awesome. Well, we'll be following your fight. Where can we find you on Instagram?
It's at M-I-H-A, so E-M-A-E-R-A.
And you're also a visual artist and a painter, so I'm sure a lot of that is up there as well. We can give you a plug for your work as well.
Exactly. Thank you very much.
Mara, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me about this. It's kicked off a really interesting conversation through Melissa's tweets about the show, but it's so great to see Quebecers continuing the conversation, negative or positive. And it's only by seeing, you know, audience members like you saying something that we're going to get this change done. We're going to see more diversity. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me. And thanks for asking me all of these important questions.
That was Mara Gabriela Puentes Benitez, a Montrealer and fan of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, about the controversy over casting two white actresses to fill the roles of Latin characters on the Quebec City adaptation of the popular TV show. Kind of kicked off a whole conversation about diversity on TV and in the arts here in Quebec. A fascinating conversation that would be interesting to follow up on a year later at some point. Maybe we'll get to that on Upstage. Tonight, you have been listening to Upstage, the show about theater on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca. This evening, you heard Marie-Christine Roy of La Tohu. The Fala is this weekend with free and fun activities for the whole family, including music and circus shows. You can visit tohu.ca for more. And we also reheard conversations with artist Camila Mackerel and artist Mara Gabriela Puentes Benitez. A big thank you to my guests. You can hear past episodes of Upstage at ckut.ca under archives. A big thank you to Jack Solar, our spoken word coordinator, for making sure this show gets to air. And thank you for tuning in. I'm your host, Sarah Day. I'll speak with you next time on Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at ckut.ca. And with that, until next time, stay safe. And happy Pride!
it takes a good dose of courage and perseverance to get through a pandemic.
True, but it also takes a good dose of patience, resilience, confidence, optimism, humor, and love. Not to mention a dose of determination, endurance, empathy, motivation, hope, and ingenuity.
But above all, it takes a second dose of vaccine.
A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
Welcome to the August 12th edition of Grey Matters. Tonight on the show, we have a lecture by Chris Hedges entitled American Sadism. It's a lecture recorded in Troy, New York on June 27th, 2021. Chris Hedges is an award-winning journalist who has reported from the Balkans, the Middle East, and Central America. He writes a weekly column for Shearpost.com. He is a host of On Contract on RT TV, and he is the author of many books, including Death of the Liberal Class, The World as It Is, Wages of Rebellion, and America, The Farewell Tour. So without further ado, here's tonight's lecture, American Sadism, by Chris Hedges.
Yes, the decorum of the Biden presidency differs from that of the Trump presidency, but the underlying mercenary exploitation and sadism of American society remains untouched. We will extract ourselves from this culture of sadism, the way the dispossessed extracted themselves from the stranglehold of crony capitalism during the Great Depression, by organizing, protesting, and disrupting the system until the ruling elites are forced to grant a measure of social and economic justice.
That's Chris Hedges, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamian. This edition of AR features Chris Hedges on American sadism. The great 20th century Irish poet William Butler Yeats wrote, "We had fed the heart on fantasies, the heart's grown brutal from the fair." The United States has long fed its heart with fairy tales about itself,